and looking forward to spring. My poem tonight is called Spiritual Renewal. It is my time for renewal. I am blossoming like a rose in Hashem's garden. I am a butterfly emerging into the heavens which Hashem has made for me. I am a bluebird soaring the sky to find its place in the sun. I am the honeybee which labors to make life sweet for all. And I am a beacon which searches the ocean for my soul's truth. I am woman. I am a Jewess.
Thank you. I feel like a real teacher here. Good evening, everyone.
Okay, a couple of announcements. So Sunday the 3rd, this coming Sunday the 3rd, at 8 p.m., Mrs. Jackie Bitton. Everybody loves when she takes over my share. This time, you can have my share tonight and Jackie Bitton's share on Sunday. Don't miss it at 8 p.m. Monday, the following week, the 11th, at 8 p.m., Rabbi Ben Zion Klatzkel is coming all the way from Muncie to speak to you at 8 p.m. Monday night, the 11th. That's all still before Pesach. What? L'Rufur Shalema Daniela Bas Sprinza. L'Rufur Shalema Sari Gittel Bas Chaika. Okay. So, this mic is not a mic. Okay, this mic is for... I don't know, can you hear me in the back? They're not sure? Well, you don't realize I asked you a question. That's how bad it is. Okay, it's 1 second. He's working on it. Well, wait a minute. So we'd like to welcome everyone who's watching from all over the place. I can't even name all the places anymore because I leave out some people, but I know there's Kansas, and there's Chicago, and there's Detroit. Detroit sent me an email this week. And there's L.A., and there's Queens, and there's Brooklyn, and there's the Five Towns, and there's Lakewood, and there's Florida, and there's Eretz Yisrael. And there's two people that go driving and listen to my shiurim in Eretz Yisrael when they go through very hard areas. The shiurim should protect them. Who did I forget? Anyone here know who I forgot? Kansas? I never forget Kansas.
Passaic.
Where?
Passaic.
Okay, Passaic also. And Muncie. All right. So I want to thank everybody for listening, but a special thank you to Ber HaGolas 10th grade for coming tonight. Yeah. We appreciate it. Sorry that we're starting late, but I happen to have been here pretty early today. All right. So, I don't want to talk about Facebook because I haven't done that in a long time.
They're just finding out on TV. I heard that they're investigating Facebook because they're seducing young people
right.
on Facebook. And I said, "That's my Rabbi Wallerstein."
Yeah. Way ahead. Because this week, they've been talking about, and I know everyone's sending it around, that there's a whole bunch of terrorists that are gathering everybody against Israel on Facebook. Don't listen to me. You know all better. Stay on Facebook. Don't listen to me. Listen to this. So I get this in the mail. And the interesting thing is that whoever sent it to me didn't tell me which side to read. Because on both sides of this article in Time Magazine, February, and you know, I don't usually like to read from Svarim. February 21st, okay, so it's like a month ago. So, in Time Magazine, there's a thing called verbatim, which means they quote exactly what the person said. So I'd like to read you something. I think this is why the person sent it to me, but then I'll read the other side. So I'm not sure which one they read. So, okay. It says the following. I'm not a big fan of young people having Facebook. It's not something they need. Okay. Who said that? Rabbi Wallerstein? Many times, right? But Time Magazine doesn't quote Rabbi Wallerstein. So who are they quoting? Who is making this statement to Time Magazine that I'm not a big fan of young people having Facebook? It's not something they need. In other words, this person was smart enough to say that Facebook is something that all of you do not need. Was it the Grand Rabbi? No. Who was it? You ready? Michelle Obama. During an appearance on the Today Show on why she does not allow first daughters Sasha and Malia to join the popular social networking site. Michelle Obama does not let her children go on Facebook. Now, she's in the White House, it's secure, no one's attacking them, no one's seducing them, right? But she feels that it's just not a place for young people to be on. So maybe all the people who are watching and listening who don't listen to me will listen to the first Rebbetzin of the United States, Michelle Obama, and you'll listen to her. Now, I think that's why this person sent it to me. But on the other side, there's another article. Well, first of all, it says, late-breaking chocolate bulletin. Good news for chocolate lovers. Not only can your favorite indulgence improve your overall cholesterol levels, but research has now found why it works the magic. Japanese investigators have found that the polyphenols in cocoa attach to the genes in the liver and intestines, activating the ones that produce HDL, or good cholesterol, as well as those that help suppress LDL, or bad cholesterol. Now, whoever listens to my share knows that one of my problems is that I'm a chocolateholic. I love chocolate. So it could be that she sent it to me for that reason. You must eat chocolate, everybody. It's good for your cholesterol. So go out, get off Facebook, and eat chocolate. But in everything's in moderation. The Rambam says everything's in moderation. Now, girls from Baragola, I don't do this every week. This is just for you that I'm doing this. You should just know. No, I'm kidding. I don't read from Time Magazine. Now, so I thought for sure, I've even everything to say to Emma Ima. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Okay, Baruch Hashem. So, the chocolate sounds like the reason she sent it, and Facebook. But on a very serious note, I don't know, it's a she even. I don't know who sent it. So this is something very interesting. It has nothing to do with anyone in this room. I mean that. But I want to read it because somebody out there is going to hear what I'm reading. And maybe they have a friend that's smoking pot or doing marijuana. Chas v'shalom, no one here. And something that they don't know. Everybody that I deal with, the few people that I deal with that smoke pot and smoke marijuana, so they're young kids, and they always tell me that it's not addictive, and it doesn't affect your brain cells, not like glue and all the other stuff. So really, it's not a bad thing. So I'm thinking that maybe the person sent me this article for this also. Pot and schizophrenia, a dangerous mix. A mind is a terrible thing to scramble. Doctors studying schizophrenia have long warned that one of the worst things someone at the risk of the disease can do is smoke marijuana, as research suggests that it can hasten the onset of the disorder. Okay? And he goes through a whole thing and says that that marijuana, even though people think it has no effect on people, that many times things that mentally would lay dormant in a person for their whole life, by smoking marijuana, it will activate it and cause that person a lot of harm. So I don't know if they send it to me to tell me chocolate is good, Facebook's no good, and pot is no good. But I think that whoever sent it to me, I felt that there are three things on one page, maybe it's meant to be. And for the people, Chas v'Shalom, that are, and kids who are, smoking marijuana and thinking that it's a joke and it doesn't really have an effect. Not the rabbis, you know, because us you don't listen to most of the time. But the scientists and the doctors are saying that it can cause triggering of many mental disorders that would never happen in a person's life if they didn't do that. So it's sort of a very big warning to the young people in our generation. Are you filming this? What's going on back there? Okay. We're good. You can hear me in the back, right? Everyone can hear me. Now that we're done with that, right, there's another article that I... Rabbi, what are you doing? Current events? I feel like I'm teaching a class, so I'm like, current events, where's the board? Okay, anyway, I didn't bring it with me, but I will bring it with me, and I'm going to send this out to all the Jewish boys, and they all have to read this. It is mandatory in South Korea that every child in school learns Gemara, Talmud. Every household in South Korea has one or two sets of Gemara, of Talmud. There is no child, no South Korean, that can graduate school without learning Gemara. Thank you. Not to the side, not in front of my face. All right, now why? Why are South Koreans learning Gemara? It's a real article. And the reason is that the South Koreans, it's a beautiful Kiddush Hashem. I have to show you, I have to make copies next week. Believe me, I'll bring copies to everyone. It's an unbelievable Kiddush Hashem. So the South Korean government was not happy with the intelligence of the South Koreans. So they went looking for the most intelligent race. And they came to the conclusion that the Jews have won the most Nobel Peace Prize, Science Prize, all these other things, literature, so that they must be the smartest people. They said, well, what makes a Jew smarter than everyone else? And they came to the conclusion because Jews learn Talmud. So now it's mandatory everywhere that every child, girl and boy, their girls are learning Gemara. That every child, girl and boy, learning Talmud. And they quoted, okay, you want to know exactly what I'm talking about, most of you, but they quoted a Mishnah called Be'a Shenol de B'yantav, an egg that's born on Yantav, if it's Muksa or not. Could you imagine the South Koreans know the whole Gemara of Be'a Shenol de B'yantav? That's crazy. So we're struggling. Why do I have to learn Gemara? Who needs to learn Gemara? It's old-fashioned. Meanwhile, the Goyim, the whole South Korea is learning Gemara. We don't know what we have. Which will bring us to the subject a little bit tonight at the end of my speech of Tznius. We think that Tznius is something, I know people don't like when I talk about Tznius. You can talk about anything, God, whatever you want, but don't you dare talk about Tznius. But Tznius, which is modesty for a Jewish girl, or for anybody, is something that we have that we don't appreciate what we have. And we'll talk about that at the end of the share. Okay. This week's parasha is Parashas Tazria. The first part of the parasha is very much about women, like giving birth to a child. The second part of the parasha is talking about a disease called tzaras. Tzaras is not leprosy, but a form of leprosy. Leprosy, if you look it up, used to have leper colonies. Leprosy is a white, scaly type of skin cancer, not a cancer, but a scaly disease that attacks the human being and can get so bad that limbs fall off. I remember as a kid when I looked it up in the encyclopedia, which you don't even know what that is anymore because it's just Google. Everything is Google, right? Google leprosy, but we didn't have a Google, right? So we had to open the book, and it was a terrible picture of what a terrible disease it is. That's a physical ailment. Tzaras is really a spiritual disease. This is the mic. A spiritual disease which comes out physically. Now, really, the Zohar says, the Arizal says, and anyone who studies medicine knows that the disease that we have physically is a mirror of the disease we have spiritually. So, in the times of the Ari HaKadosh, if somebody would come and say, I have a toothache. Which tooth? The fourth one on the left side and the upper. The Arizal would say that coagulates with the 612th mitzvah in the Torah. You're having a problem with that mitzvah. Fix that mitzvah, your tooth will get better. And that's how he used to heal people. He didn't give them medicine. He fixed the spiritual ailment that they were going through. And when he fixed the ailment, the spiritual, then the physical ailment got fixed. So tzaras is a disease that comes from a spiritual ailment. What specific avera, everyone? Lashon Hara. Tzaras comes from Lashon Hara. Now, what is Lashon Hara based on? Why does a person speak Lashon Hara? When a person speaks Lashon Hara, most of the time, because they are jealous. Why is a person jealous? Why is someone jealous? Why would someone be jealous of another person? Because deep down they don't believe that Hashem is the one that gives everybody what they get. Because if deep down you believed that Hashem gives you what you're supposed to get, then why would you be jealous of me? Right? So you don't have rabbits running around the world saying, I wish I was a giraffe and I could see over the trees. Right? You don't have ants running around saying, I wish I had wings and I was a butterfly. Because that Bria, every part of the Bria, knows that they were created, that's what they were created for, and they're not looking at the other Bria and saying, I want to be that. And they're makabel from Hashem what they are. So the first thing you have to know that a person who's jealous is a person who doesn't have real emunah. If you're jealous of another girl that she got married and you didn't, that she's prettier or richer or whatever you're jealous of, she gets better marks, that means that you don't really believe in Hashem. Because if you really believe in Hashem and He created everybody and He gave us each what we need, then you would never be jealous. So I have a very interesting story, very nice story, about understanding that what a person has in this world is what you're supposed to have. And I think that's the basis of a lot of the problems that we have in low self-esteem. Even I see it very often, that a girl or a boy has low self-esteem because he's not accomplishing what the other person's accomplishing. But you're not supposed to accomplish what the other person's accomplishing. You're supposed to accomplish what you're supposed to accomplish. So a person that's always busy looking at someone else, there's a lot of character flaws. And it has a huge effect on that person's life. So the story goes like this. I've said it here before many years ago. I think it's a very important story for all of us to understand. First of all, the Torah tells us that who was the one that was the doctor for leprosy, for tzaraas, for lashon hara? The Kohen. So a doctor didn't come look at your arm or look at your house or look at your clothing, because tzaraas first came on your house. You had a big white spot on a rock in your house. You called the Kohen. You looked at it. If it's tzaraas, they have to take the rock out and chop it up and burn it and get rid of it. If you didn't learn your lesson and you continued talking lashon hara and you're a gossip monger, then the tzaraas comes on your clothing. All of a sudden there's a white spot on your clothing. You have to take your clothing, you have to burn it. If you still didn't get the message, then the tzaraas comes out on your body. When Hashem wants to send us a message, first He sends it to our property. If we don't get the message when it's on our property, then He sends it to our clothing, to something that's closer. It doesn't have to be clothing, but something that's closer. And if you still don't get the message, then chas v'shalom, the person becomes sick. Now, the one that took care of all the tzaraas was a kohen. Why don't you call a doctor? A kohen. The guy works in the Beis HaMikdash. Why do you call a kohen? And the answer is that a kohen comes from Aaron HaKohen. What did Aaron HaKohen do? He was Oyev Shalom, V'Roydev Shalom. All he did his whole day was try to put people together. People who were getting divorced and people who were being separated. He put them together. He made peace between business partners. So therefore, what is Lashon Hara when you talk bad about somebody? What does that do?
Separates
them. So who's better to fix that than the guy who always puts everyone together? So it's the Kohen's job, since that's what he does in his life, that's his DNA, to take care of the Jewish people who get tzaraas. Now in Pasuk Gimel, it says that the Kohen saw the tzaraas, then he looked at it again, and when he looked at it again, he said that the person was tameh. So the question is, why do you have to look twice? Why don't you just, a doctor looks at your strep culture, it's positive. So why did the Kohen have to look twice? And the answer is, because that's the lesson to teach all of us girls. That a person who looks twice will never judge another person in the wrong manner. And a person who looks twice at the other person will never say lashon hara about the other person. The problem is that we look once and we make a fast decision what we think of that other person. So the Kohen says, if I look once and I say you're tamei, then I'm doing what you did. So therefore I have to look twice, not like you did. And when a person looks twice, the second look already tells you a lot more than the first look. So that's very important, that a person has to look twice. And It's very, very true. The first impression, especially teachers and people like that, you know, you hear a story about a kid, you got to hear the story twice and you got to look into it. It's not always what it seems to be. So therefore, Klein, his job was always to look twice. So this story is about a father who had three sons. The oldest son was miserable, bad guy. He didn't get along with his father, never did anything for his father. He was a terrible guy. The middle son, kumsi kumsa, sometimes he helped his father, and sometimes he didn't help his father. The youngest son was a tzaddik. Kivud of aim, always took care of his father, was always there for his father, was an amazing, amazing boy. His father became an old man. He was dying. So he called his three sons in to talk to them. Now, they lived on an island. They lived on an island all their life with their father. And the father said to the three sons, all the money that I've made, and I've made millions of dollars in my life, I didn't want to keep on the island. We don't have any banks. So I sent it to the mainland. So there's a bank. You go across the sea from this island, there's a bank, and in that bank, here's my number. In the account is $2.5 million. The first son that gets there gives my number and gets the whole money. Dad, it's a race. It's a race. It's a race. One of you is going to win the $2.5 million. Okay? So the father turns to the oldest son and he says, okay, you go first, go down to the pier, and your boat is waiting for you. He goes down, huge yacht, 120-foot yacht with a party, it's a party boat with girls and music and whiskey, and it's one of these big, huge party boats with a skipper and a captain, and waiters. He's like, wow, I thought my father didn't like me. We didn't get along. I can't believe that after the way I treated him, this is the boat that he's giving me. Okay, gets in the boat. Captain, let's go. This is the place we need to go. He's off. But he's thinking to himself, oh my goodness, if my father gave me such a boat, could you imagine the boat that my other brothers are going to get? So the father tells the second boy, okay, my middle son, you've been sometimes good to me. Go down, get your boat. He goes down. Beautiful sailboat. Huge sail. Not a motorboat like that. Yacht. But a huge sail. A huge boat. Beautiful boat. Not such a big party boat, but a really beautiful boat with some people on it. He gets on the boat, they put the sail into the wind, they're off. Doesn't have much of a chance to beat that huge yacht, though. And then the father calls over the youngest son. And he says to the youngest son, so, you've been good to me. And even though it's not going to seem to you that I'm good to you, trust me, I'm very good to you. Go down, get your boat, and I hope you win. And he gave him a kiss, and the boy's all excited, goes down to the pier, and there at the pier is a rowboat. A rowboat with two oars. And the boy's like, what? My brother got a yacht. My middle brother got a sailboat, and my father told me a whole speech how much he loves me. He gave me a rowboat? Nope, what do? You get into the boat and you row. So he gets into the boat. I don't know if any of you have ever gone in a rowboat. Pretty much it's out of style these days. Maybe the girls are still dating in the summer. You know, the guy took in a rowboat. Could be if he's really cheap and you want to rent a motorboat. And on top of that, he had you row instead of him. Okay. Anyway, so He gets to the rowboat and he starts to row. And his back is killing him. His hands are getting full of blisters. It's very sad. Now, his brother in the big yacht, who was always, you know, like, making fun of this boy, says, you know what? Let's go. Look what Chaim got, a rowboat. And he tells all the girls and all the guys partying, check out my little brother in the rowboat. Now, whoever was who made trouble in the mountains knows if you take a motorboat and you go really fast around a rowboat, so the waves, like, tip it over, they tip it over. And they make it very wet. So this guy thought he'd be a wise guy. So with his big yacht, he starts to circle the rowboat. And this poor little kid, right, he's going up and down. There's water all over the boat. He's getting spritzed. He's getting soaked. And they're all laughing. The girls are all laughing. Look at this stupid little kid in the rowboat. His father gave him a rowboat. That's what he's got to do. All right, not enough fun making fun of them. And they're like, we'll see you. Maybe when you get to the bank, after I collect all the money, I'll have a slice of pizza for you. Hurry up. And he takes off. Second brother, who's in the sailboat, does the same thing. Goes around, makes fun of him, jokes around. I mean, it is a little funny that their little brother got a rowboat. It's pretty funny. If you think about it, it's pretty funny. Can anybody in this room that's sitting here, or anybody watching this shiur, imagine in their head what's going through this boy's head? I mean, I'm not going to say he hates his father right now, but he surely doesn't understand him. My brother, who treated my father miserable, has a yacht. My other brother, who was kumsi kumsa, has a sailboat. I was there for my father every second. He gave me a rowboat. Is it a little fair? Is it tzaddik viralo? God, you know, the tzaddik and he has a bad life, and Russia betoivle. How many of us watching this shiur and listening and being in this room feel that the whole world around us are in beautiful yachts and we're never stuck in a rowboat? Many of us have blisters on our hands and a weight on our back as we go through life. It's definitely not a yacht or a sailboat. It's much more like a rowboat. All you hear growing up is if you want to get somewhere, you got to put your back to it. That's a rowboat. In a sailboat, you don't. In a yacht, you don't. So this boy is very mixed up, like any one of us would be mixed up. But he continues rowing. If his father gave him a rowboat, and his father really loves him, then he knows there's something here he doesn't understand. The same thing with Emunah. I went to visit before here, came from Cornell's ICU unit for cancer patients. Went to visit a lady. So I went there to give her chizuk. Who am I to give her chizuk? But I told her that the only thing I could tell her really is that, you know, when I went through, and I spoke to you about this, that when I went through my kidney stones and they had to, well, it wasn't operate, but whatever, to crush the stone, so they have to put you out. And I didn't know what pasuk to say before they put me out. Shema Yisrael, Shamaz Mimamakim. I didn't know what to say. And mamash, when they were putting the anesthesia into the Demerol into my hand, you know, you have like, they say we're going to count to 10. Don't go for that, because you should never know from it, but they don't go past 4. By 4, you're out. So, you know, we're going to count to 10, and I'm thinking, new. And I said, you know what? I say Adon Olam all the time. And there's a pasuk in Adon Olam, Uva Yado of Kidruchi. And in his hand, I put my spirit. And I remember saying that, saying to Hashem, listen, I don't know if I'm going to wake up. I'm not going to wake up. I don't know if it's going to be successful, not successful. The bottom line is my whole life, I'm in your hands. So it doesn't change now. So what am I worried about? And I let go. I was nervous. I was uptight. I was scared. I let go of all of that. I just let it go. I said, Uviyadav Kidruchi, I'm in your hands, Hashem. That's it, you handle it. And it's a very cute story. It's like a Chelm story, you know, about this poor man that was walking and he had a 50-pound sack on his back and he was bent over and he was schlepping the sack and along came a wagon and the guy in the wagon said, hey, you look like your back is breaking, you know, jump on. Get on. And the guy said, really, you let me go with you? He goes, sure. And he gets on the wagon. And he's sitting on the wagon bent over with the 50-pound pack on his back. And the owner of the wagon says, what are you doing? You don't got to carry it anymore. You're sitting in the wagon. Take it off and put it in the wagon. He says, what do you mean? It's nice enough that you're taking me. You want to schlep my package too? So it sounds like a Chelm story, right? So the owner of the wagon said, you don't understand. Once you're sitting in my wagon, everything that's on your back is in my wagon. So it's no difference to my horses or my wagon if it's on your back, the 50 pounds, or it's on the floor. Take it off your back. Hashech al Hashem yahavcha b'hu yikar kalecha. If Hashem is carrying you through life anyway, girls, he's carrying you through life anyway. He's giving you life and breath and everyday life. So he's carrying you anyway, so take your package off and give it to him. It's not an extra weight to God. Oh, God, I don't want to bother you. You're not bothering me. I'm carrying you. And if I'm carrying you, I'm carrying everything that you're carrying. So take it off your own back and put it down and put it on my back. So I told this woman tonight, I said, I can't, the only chizik I can tell you is, just don't worry. As much life as Hashem gave you, he's going to give you more life. So you're going through something, so take that pekula of cancer, whatever you're going through, and take that off your back and put it on his back. He's carrying you anyway. I hope it was a chizik. I think it was a chizik. And that's what this story is all about that I'm telling you. Because what happened? About 2 days into rowing, when his back was broken and his hands were blistered, and he was starting to say, ugh, what a waste of time that I helped my father. Look what I'm getting. Look at my brothers. All of a sudden, he came across the yacht. And the yacht was floating in the middle of the ocean. And it wasn't moving. And his brother, his oldest brother, was standing on the top screaming, Chaim! Can I get into your boat? Chaim said, you want to get into my boat? I have a rowboat. But it's not a regular rowboat. It's a kayak. You know what a kayak is, girls? There's a little hole, and it's like a canoe with a little hole in it, and there's only room for one. So he said, I would love to take you, brother, but Dad only gave me room for one. But what's going on? Why aren't you going? He said, you see, Dad didn't fill up the tank with gas. I didn't know that. I'm stuck out here in the middle of the ocean without gas. Wish I could help you. How come I don't see anybody dancing or drinking? Wish I could help you, but I can't. There's no room in my kayak. A day later, he meets brother number two. What's going on? Because you're not going to believe it. The wind stopped. There's no wind. We can't move without wind. We don't even have oars. So Chaim goes, all right, I'll try to help you. Oh, if that didn't move your boat, I guess I can't help you. And then he understood, girls, the chachma of his father. Sure, it was fun for 3 days in the yacht. But the fun ends. Sure, it was great to have a sailboat in the winds. But the winds stop. But the power that Chaim had to get to the other side was his own. And his father knew who his son Chaim was. And he knew that his son had the power to get there. And of course, the end of the story, he rows himself for a week or 10 days. He gets there. And he's the only one that gets there. Collects the money and lives happily ever after. It's a mashal from the Dugma Magid. And the Dugma Magid says the following. And I think that if everyone in this room and everyone watching understands this, they'll never have a problem with Lashon Hara and Tzaras. Dugma Magid says, ladies and of gentlemen watching this, that every single person is a rowboat. And every single person has been given the oars to get to the end of the journey. But Hashem wants you to do it on your own power. You have to start. You have to start to row. And therefore, the Jewish nation, who is supposedly the chosen nation, we're watching countries with billions and zillions of dollars of oil, of natural resources, powerful countries, and Israel's a teeny little country and everybody wants to destroy it. We went through a Holocaust. It doesn't look like we're the chosen nation. We're sitting in the rowboat saying, Dad, Hashem, what? We're special? That's why you gave us a rowboat? And the answer is, says the Dugma Magi, that when Mashiach comes, girls, we're going to be the ones that are going to get to the main land, where the bank is, where the gold is. And all the other ones are going to get stuck in the middle of the water with all their oil and all their riches and all their other stuff that they have. But the nation that's chosen to walk with Mashiach and to be married to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is this nation. And therefore, what are we jealous of? You'll see a lot of people that you think have big, giant yachts, so to say, in their life. And everything is going great. And you're wondering, why is Hashem, you know, I'm close to Hashem, I'm doing the right thing. Hashem is, don't look at the other boat. Some of them have gas, some of them don't have gas. Some of them have wind, some of them don't have wind. That's not your business. Your business is, you're put into this world with a set of oars, with the ability to make it. The father of this child didn't put him in a rowboat without oars. That would have been evil. He put him in a rowboat with oars. Yes, it's work and his back hurt and his hands hurt. But he only understood the whole thing when he saw that his brothers weren't moving anymore. That's when he chap. But until then, can imagine what he was thinking. A person who understands that in life, that God has given you your oars, you'll never be jealous of the other person, whatever they have. So you realize that you have been given the tools to reach your mainland in 120 years. And no one speaks, let me tell you something. No one speaks Lashon Hara deep down. If you get to the core of Lashon Hara, nobody speaks Lashon Hara unless you're jealous. You're not going to speak Lashon Hara about some tribe in Africa. You're not jealous of a tribe in Africa. You're not going to speak Lashon Hara about zebras or giraffes or Martians or people you don't know. You're going to speak Lashon Hara about people that by bringing them down, it makes you taller. I was sitting by Rabbi Gamliel once. I don't think I ever told this story. I was sitting by Rabbi Gamliel once, and this American boy came in who was married came to Eretz Yisrael to talk to him. And he was married for about eight or nine years. And he came to Rabbi Gamliel, he wants to get divorced. I happened to have been sitting there. Rabbi Gamliel asked him, why do you want to get divorced? And he said, because I am so much more intelligent than my wife, I just can't live with someone that's that stupid. That's what he said to Rabbi Gamliel. So you saw right away that this boy was a big Balgaiva, and if I were her, I would tell her to get out of there. But he's a big Balgaiva, he's very smart, he's very intelligent, he graduated this, he graduated that. He married her, but he realized he can't have a discussion, he can't, whatever. He was like really putting her down. He said, unless the rabbi can give me advice somehow, maybe through Kabbalah, how to take someone's IQ and make it much higher. You know, Kabbalah can do everything, right? Now, you know, Muhammad. So they think you can give them, like, say this and this word, your IQ goes from 103 to 163, you know? So he asked that to Rabbi Gamliel. So I was sitting there, I was like, let's see what my Rebbe says, because that's like... So you know what Rabbi Gamliel said? He said, you think you're much higher than her, like this, right? You're here, she's here. So you want to bring her up here. You want some magic to give her some crazy intelligence so that you'll be equal. He says, you know what your problem is? That you're looking at her instead of yourself. He said, how about coming down here to get equal? What do you mean? I should become stupid? Like, what are you talking about? So he was very upset. I was very upset. If this guy was my Talmud, I would have
whacked him one. That's not how you talk about someone else. So Gamaliel said to him, you think your intelligence makes the person? He says, I guarantee you that that she's a much bigger person than you'll ever be. He says, because you're intelligent, you could talk about another person like that? He said, she's probably way, way, way higher than you. What you need to do is go back home. So you have more intelligence than her. She has more midos than you. So you talk to her about intelligent things and teach her. And tell her that you need her to teach you about midos and how to talk about someone. So in Lashon Hara, you're always looking to take that other person down to make you feel better. Take yourself up to make yourself better. Don't take the other person down. Take yourself up. And no matter what you think or what you feel, if you're talking Lashon Hara about somebody, that person is bothering you because you are jealous. We do not talk about people we are not jealous of. Could be their money, could be where they are in school, it could be a million different things. People we're not jealous of, we don't talk Lashon Hara about it. So I think everyone has to internalize that and think about it before they open their mouth and talk about someone. I mean, in the last 2 weeks, what I have heard Lashon Hara about on Shiduchim, what people say, it's not normal. And people think that for Shiduchim, you're allowed to just say whatever you want to say about the other person. Chas v'shalom. Chas v'shalom. Your mom is killing the other person for life because that person, now that you said bad, she's going to tell someone else who's going to ask about the shidduch. And usually it's based on jealousy, because if you're not jealous of that other person, what you say about her can be said in many, many different ways. And a lot of details can be left out, and you can give the same message without the details. And sometimes the person was asking information, and the girl is like, "Oh, you don't know what happened at school," and this, and the other person is like, "Okay, it's enough. I don't need to hear anymore." No, you need to hear more. What is that? No, you need to. What do you mean? I told you I don't want to hear. You know, Rabbi, you need to hear more about this girl. In Shemayim, you're going to be judged for that. Learn the Hilchos Lashon Hara. Buy the book from Art Scroll, Lesson a Day. You can't just say bad about people for Shiduchim. Teachers, you cannot talk bad about another student. You can't sit in the office and have six teachers talking about students. Just like it says in the elevator in the hospital that doctors cannot discuss their patients. Teachers cannot discuss their students in front of other teachers. In Yeshiva Crown Heights, where I teach, so one year they decided to give, they call it anecdotal cards, where the teacher, let's say sixth grade, so the teacher going out of sixth grade writes a card about the kid and gives it to the seventh grade teacher for the next year so that she knows what happened with the kid in sixth grade. And I totally disallowed it. Let the seventh grade teacher find out about the kid on her own. How dare you paint a picture before the kid even gets there? That's defamation of character. That's Lashon Hara. That's Mitzi Shemra. You think you're getting Gan Eden for teaching Jewish children? You're getting Gehenna. How dare you write about a child to another teacher? That teacher will find out about the child on her own. Maybe that summer, the kid changed. And now, you took that away from them. That's this week's Parsha, girls. This terrible Avera called Lashon Hara, which in the times of the Beis HaMikdash caused tzoras. Nobody knows today what physical ailment it causes. It could be a very, very serious one. Because it didn't go away. It's not like, oh, no Beis HaMikdash, no more tzoras. No more Beis HaMikdash, no more Kohen can cure the tzaras. But the tzaras is still here, and we can't point our finger and say which disease it is physically coming out as. But we can think about it. Now, that doesn't mean that every person who has a disease spoke Lashon Hara. Because we as a Klal Yisrael, we're one nation, we're one guf. So if you speak Lashon Hara, it can affect the tzaddik hadar, the chas v'shalom, he can get very sick. We're one guf, we're one body. So it's very, very important, especially before Pesach, when you go to hotels and when you sit around the table and family that you don't see a whole year and people don't know what to do with themselves and they like to gossip. Chas v'shalom. Chas v'shalom, the harm that you can be doing to yourself and to your family and to Klal Yisrael by talking bad about other people. And you need to learn what the halachas are of Lashon Hara, because people think that, you know, so many things, you know, for a job, be very careful when you give information about a girl for a job. Okay. So, I want to give you all a bracha. And the bracha is like this. The disease, we know, I always speak about that, the bad side and the good side mirror each other. So the disease of Tzaraas comes first on the house, then on your clothing, then on your body. That is the, now it's such a tamei disease that the man that gets Tzaraas has to be taken chutz lamachaneh, outside, away from all the Jews. The reason, talking Lashon Hara, you're separating yourself from the other people, you're hurting them. So now, when you get Tzaraas, we force you and we separate you. So just like the tumma starts on the house, then on the clothing, then on the person, the kedusha, the holiness of a Jew. No, I'm not insulted that they're walking out. They told me beforehand, everyone's looking at them, that they need to leave at 1:45. So they stayed an extra 15 minutes. So you're very welcome. They're all angry. You're walking out of Rabbi Wallerstein. See? You didn't look twice. It's my whole shiur tonight. You have to look twice. At first look, oh my God, all these girls are walking out on him. How could they do that? But you don't know that they came to me before they even walked in and they said, Rabbi Wallerstein, we're going to leave at 9:45, so don't be insulted. And they stay till 10. So you see, everybody, the lesson that we taught tonight, second look. Second look would be, he introduced the 10th grade of Ber HaGola. He welcomed them. Even though it looks like they're walking out on him, that cannot make sense. He welcomed the class and they walked out on him. Must be something's up. Now, had I not said what I just said to all of you, that they made it up beforehand, some of you would have gone home tonight and in your hearts would have said, wasn't that on your car ride home, Chani, wasn't that disgusting? 15 girls got up and walked down Rabbi Wallerstein? Ugh, Ber HaGola, they have no respect. And look how wrong you would have been. They have so much respect. Second look, second thought prevents this from happening. Okay, anyway, so my bracha to you is that just like the tumma starts on the house, then it goes to the clothing, then it goes to the body, the kedusha also starts in the house. Then to the clothing, and then to the person. You first need to have a holy house with no DVDs, and no internet, and no televisions, and no movies, and no geisha music. I know I'm taking away your whole life. And no Facebook. And you get that all out of your house, then guess what happens? You become more of a tsnua. Then the kedusha goes onto your clothing, and you no longer want to dress provocatively, because your house is a holy place. And if you live in a holy place all the time, then when you leave that holy place, you also want to be holy. So all of a sudden, your tsnius is going to come up. You're going to become more tsnua. And then once you become more tsnua, you as a person will internalize it and become a better person. So just like the tumma goes that way, the kedusha goes that way. So my bracha to all of you is, your houses should be kaddish, your clothing should be kaddish, you should be kaddish, and you should all have the inner strength to row, row, row your boat right to Mashiach.